This is Defender Radio. I'm Michael Howie, and this is Defender Radio, the podcast for wildlife advocates and animal lovers, brought to you by the Fur Bearers. The search for home is something most people can relate to at some point in their lives. Regardless of circumstance, that need for the place that is yours, surrounded by the people you love, and the sense of wellness that comes with it, it's a universal desire. And it's not just for humans. Animals bred and kept as livestock, or farmed animals, have similar feelings and needs. And one incredible group of people is helping make sure that a forever home exists for those they can help. A Home for Hooves Farm Sanctuary is a haven for animals on Vancouver Island, where pigs, goats, horses, chickens, and other domestic animals can live out their days with love, peace, and serenity. The first Canadian farm sanctuary to be accredited by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, A Home for Hooves was founded in 2017 and cares for over 170 animals. To share the story of how the sanctuary was born, how the location is managed to protect wildlife and the sanctuary animals, and how a big pig named Cyrus led to an even bigger move, Defender Radio is joined by A Home for Hooves founder and director, Michelle Singleton. As we have learned in the last 15 or so years of entertainment, every story has to start by law with an origin. So, Michelle, could you share with us the background story of Home for Hooves?
So I was one of those individuals who was obsessed with what I thought were miniature pigs my entire life, thinking that they, you know, they're small little teacup pigs. And then my husband and I moved to a property out in Duncan. This is probably about 12 years ago now. And so it was about 5 acres of land, and there was a large seizure done by the SPCA of about 60 potbelly pigs out of Ladysmith. So I thought, you know, this is the perfect opportunity for me to get, you know, my micro pigs. While I was waiting for them to be weaned off their mom, it was two little piglets. There was a potbelly pig down in Victoria who hadn't been able to be adopted for a year. At the time, I thought it was because she was just timid. Now I'm very well educated in this, and I know that it's because she was full grown. Nobody wants full grown potbelly pigs. So I adopted her while I waited for Charlotte and Charlie. And then once they were ready, I adopted them. So I had my three little pigs living here, and we got a fence and stuff all ready for them. And I wanted to learn more about them. So I got involved with a sanctuary out in Chemainus just to learn more about them. And at the time I was vegetarian. So I had the education session there, and I just had my daughter. She was about a year old at that time. So once I learned about the dairy industry, and having my own child very recently, it was very apparent I needed to make some changes. Yep. So I literally went vegan overnight, started volunteering there every single Saturday. And within about 6 weeks, I actually lost my father unexpectedly to a heart attack. It was the hardest moment in my life. I was really close with my dad, but it was one of those tragedies that kind of makes you look at your life and what are you doing with it? And at the time I'm still working full-time for the health authority, but I was working full-time and not really contributing or doing anything to make anybody's life positive. So loved animals my whole life. And almost at the same time, there was a large 1,000-pound sow up in Courtney. And I was asked if I would take her.
Yeah.
Because people knew that I had land here and I had three pigs, but my little pigs were still little. They were under 100 pounds. They were small, not a 1,000-pound pig.
Yeah, 10 times increase. Yeah.
Yes. It's just a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So I said no flat. I was like, there's no way. Like, that is way too much of a leap for me. But it just kept bothering me, and I just kept thinking about it. And eventually I said yes. We built the pen here for her, and I went up there to meet her. And it was, so what her story was her whole life she was being used to produce pigs for food. And the last litter that she had had, she didn't deliver them very well, and she actually hemorrhaged. They were able to stop the bleeding and she survived, but they knew they could never breed her again. So they knew they had to get rid of her. Working farm, they're not going to have a mouth there to feed who has no purpose. So, but the wife of the farmer was quite attached to her. And she said to her husband, there's no way we can eat her. Like they'd had developed that relationship with her and she wanted her to go to a safe place. So I went up there and it was the typical farm where there's like that stench, that smell, and everyone seems to link that to pigs. Where at the end of the day, they're an incredibly clean animal. And the only reason they smell like that is because nobody is cleaning up their feces and they're in small pens that are all muddy and it's just poop mud that's churned up and that's where the smell comes from. But if they're actually in a clean environment, they don't smell at all. So anyways, once I saw this environment, I just knew I had to get her out of it. So yeah, I just made the changes, brought her here. And kind of the rest is history. I don't even really remember it. It was over 7 years ago now, but yeah, we went from six animals. So we had the three pigs and I think two guinea pigs and two cats. And then now we've got over 170. So it's kind of a blur,
It's a bit of a
but
jump.
yeah.
Well, now along the way, Home for Hooves Farm Sanctuary becomes a charity, board of
Yeah.
directors, which is very well put together. As someone who enjoys the order of such things, is very appreciative of that whenever I see it. But one of the things that has happened along the way is that you became accredited by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, and not only accredited, but the first Canadian sanctuary to become accredited. Could you share a bit about what that means and why it was a priority for Home for Hooves?
Yeah, so in my personal life, so my career, I'm a lab technologist, and I've been in leadership roles my whole life in the health authority for the labs. So in the health authority, we go through accreditation all the time. It is something that is required. It makes sure that, we're running things properly, we're doing things correctly, our procedures are correct. It's a third party who comes in and assesses you. So I knew, to me, it wasn't daunting like it is to a lot of people because I've been doing it my whole life. It's just the norm for me, and I've led it at several hospitals. So I was like, no brainer. This is super easy. And I can see there's so many rescues out there. Anybody can start a rescue. There is no accountability. There is nobody that's actually looking to make sure that rescues are doing a good job. In BC, to get a nonprofit, you literally log onto a website, get your name approved, start your nonprofit. Once a year, you click a button that said you held your AGM. That's it. That's all you have to do. There's no accountability. There's nobody actually coming in and making sure you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. So for me, it's something I think is really important. I think other sanctuaries. So we're just to clarify too, we're the first farm sanctuary in Canada. There's two other sanctuaries that are accredited as well. One's a donkey sanctuary in Ontario, and the other one is, I believe,
Oh, the donkey
chimpanzee in
sanctuary.
Quebec. Yeah, and then
Yeah,
I
that
believe,
place
yeah,
is
it's.
great.
And then there's a chimpanzee. I can't remember the name. I think it's called Fauna Sanctuary. They're accredited as well, but we were the first like farmed animal sanctuary to be accredited. Yeah. So basically, they come in. They look at everything from your setup, number of animals you have, your medical records. They look at your fencing system, your houses, like everything from the animal care to your policies and procedures. So it's a they make sure that what we're doing things correctly. And if there's things for them like that we need to fix, we fix it and we make it better. So they look after sanctuaries all over the world. And they're also a really good resource too. So if you ever have any questions, they're like, well, this sanctuary is doing this. Here's some examples. So you're always improving, you're always striving to improve. But I think the biggest piece, and they actually come on site too. So it's not just submitting evidence, they actually come on site and make sure you're doing things you're supposed to be doing. So I just think it's incredibly important to have any kind of accountability and showing that what you're doing is correct. And you can actually prove that what you're doing is correct because there are stories, like there's a huge one out of the States right now. All the animals were like dead or dying, and she was just sitting in her living room collecting money. So this actually proves that what we're doing is correct, and people can actually have confidence that they're supporting an organization that looks after animals correctly.
It's amazing. And it's interesting too, because the site visit that the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries does sounds, without having the firsthand knowledge, it sounds as though it may be more advanced than the government inspections of farms at times, based on my experience, which is limited. Again, limited experience, but I have seen one-page checklists. So, that is a very interesting way of doing it. And I like that idea of it's not your standard, it's someone else's standard that is independent from you and what you are trying to do. And 100%. I agree. I think anytime you can do that in whatever sector you're in, I think it just makes everything a little bit better. And when you don't know what to do, right, if you do run into a wall or something, you can fall back onto it, like you said, of there also there is a resource. So when you're not sure which way to go or what, how to handle a situation, you've got that to rely on. So it sounds great. And just a little fastball, curveball here. Can you remember the names of each of the 171 animals, top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I probably could get pretty close.
That's impressive. I have trouble remembering the names of three cats that I've lived with for several years.
The only ones, like, I know all of the, like, the chicken names, I know all of them. But so we use a program called Shelter Manager, and everybody is banded with gems. Okay. I can't tell all of them by looking at them who they are, but I could figure it out. Yeah. But yeah, every pig, I can name every single pig. I can name every single duck, turkey, the sheep, the goats, everybody else. The chickens are a little bit trickier because they look a lot alike. Yep. But those little creatures are very smart, and they can tell who's who. They're better at it than I am. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's cool, too, that it makes sense that there would be a system like that. And I imagine it also makes things like medical records and stuff like that way easier to manage if you can just sort of reference, this is the animal in the number on the tag, the gem, whatever the ID tag is, references back to a digital file with all of you. Like, come on, that's great. I could use that for half my life.
Yeah, every single animal has a file. They have all of their medical records, all their surrender papers, all of their notes, all of their markings. Everything about them is kept in this system.
Amazing. I love it. And sort of on that note, there's an evolution occurring right now. So the timing of this episode might be close to the end of April when it releases. I'm just trying to pull up a calendar while knocking things over on my desk. I think we're going to be coming out on the 29th is the plan. And I believe right a day or two after that is something quite exciting for A Home for Hooves. And rather than me get into it, I'd love to hear the beautiful story from you again.
Yeah, so about 2.5 years ago, I recognized that where we are right now is way too small. And if I'm going to do anything to improve the quality of life for the animals we currently have, or for our future residents, or potentially ones who are desperately in need of a home, we needed to move. So in the beginning, I didn't know how I would do it because living on Vancouver Island, farmland is extremely expensive here.
Yeah.
So it's just like one of those things I just focused on it, manifested it. I was like, we're just going to do this. And we just put our heads down and got to work. I've written hundreds of letters. I've talked to hundreds of people. I do as many radio and TV interviews that I can just to get our name out there and just to talk to people. So yeah, 2.5 years ago, we had, no money saved for this capital campaign. Mm-hmm. To now we have raised over $2.6 million.
Wow.
To purchase a $3.1 million property here in Duncan. So it's a 40-acre farm. And the thing with this too is like we were working with a realtor, we were going to different farms kind of throughout this, even when we didn't have the necessary down payment, but I just kind of wanted to kind of keep in the market, see what's out there. Every single place we looked at, like some of them were big enough, but no barns, no fences, no nothing. And I had it built on our website and I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted barns. I wanted a building we could have as a medical unit. I wanted like over 40 acres. I wanted a place with lots of fencing and a pond as well. So I had all this on the website. This is what I'm looking for. About a year and a half later, I got a call about a pig named Cyrus. And at the time I was like, I can't take any more pigs, especially big pigs. But he's one of those animals, like we just had to move mountains to get him out. So I was told that the owner didn't want him anymore. So she actually sent a couple of men to try and stab him to death in the heart.
Jeez.
He's a 600-pound Yorkshire pig. So he didn't succumb to his injuries, thankfully. And then the tenant on the property, she actually phoned it into the BCSPCA and the RCMP. So they actually came out that weekend. They couldn't get a hold of a farm vet, and the only vet they could get a hold of was a wildlife vet. And originally they wanted him to be euthanized because of his injuries. Pigs are not easy animals to euthanize. You need to know what you're doing. A wildlife vet has zero experience. So he told him, there's no way I can do it. Like, I just can't. So pigs are remarkable healers. They're kind of like the superhero of healers just because of their nature and how they fight a lot. They heal from their injuries very quickly. So he started to heal well enough that by the time another vet was able to come, they thought he was going to be okay. So for me, this story, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he was also intact as well. So there was no way I could bring him to our property. A 600-pound boar is, they're powerful animals. And if they want out, they're going to get out if you don't have the proper structure.
I guess they're a
So
little
we've,
amorous as well at times.
yeah, like Cyrus, now that I know him, he is, oh, he just stolen my heart. He is the sweetest old man pig you could ever meet in a million years. And he's super chatty. I just adore him. But I didn't know what I was getting myself into either. Like, I said yes, sight unseen, because of what had happened to him. I didn't know how he was going to react to people given what had happened to him. So yeah, we a ton of media around it, lots of like CBC, CTV, Czech News. My post was seen by over 10,000 people. There were a few people that reached out. I went to their places, but like totally unsuitable. Like a lot of people don't understand the environment that a pigs need to live in. And also they have kind of this, like with Esther the Wonder Pig, some people were like, oh, they can just come in the house. So for example, there was one person and I was like, well, what do you have in your backyard? And she was like, oh, it's just like a little backyard. It was like a residential area. And I'm like, well, one, bylaw, you're not allowed to. And I was like, well, he have access to your house. Me thinking, is he going to have access to your actual outside of your house? Because he'll probably wreck it. She her thought was, oh yeah, there's sliding doors. I can come in the kitchen. And I was like, no, not appropriate. So the few places I went to, like, there was a lot of people had like were really upset by this and they wanted to help. But nobody had the appropriate area for him to go. So going back to the wildlife vet, he knew someone in Duncan here he was really close with, and she had like an area he could go into. And she's kind of done her own rescue privately throughout her whole life. And he begged and pleaded with her. He said, can you help her out? This pig is special. There's something about him. Can you just help? And she'd only looked after potbelly pigs too. So to take on an animal who had just been violently stabbed, was intact, was a big thing for her too. So she said yes. So with him, like we got him neutered, we did all those things, and he's just an absolute sweetheart. But because of where he was, it's kind of off of onto a dead end road. I was driving by this farm constantly because I was going to see him, making sure he was healing, and with the neuter and stuff, I was there all the time. And I could see that it was vacant. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to send them a letter, see if they want to sell. Like, what do I got to lose? And then, like 3 days later, they phoned me and they were like, this is really odd. They said, we had no plans on selling, but when we looked at your website, they're like, you literally described our farm to a T. This is exactly like we've got the quarantine barn, we've got barns, we have a pond, we have tons of fencing, we have a shop to make into a medical unit, we have a house here that you guys like, because a charity owns it, like someone can rent from it and have sustainable income. So they were kind of blown away. And so they agreed to let me come there and meet them. Went there, met them, talked to them, lovely people. And they were like, and at the time I'd had about $1 million raised, so nowhere near what I needed to do a down payment. And they said, we had no plans to sell, but we'll give you some time, to try and get some more money for a down payment. So then once I had the place, things really took off. And then by the fall, I had a big enough down payment. One of our major donors had recommended that I contact Island Savings because it's not easy to get a mortgage through a charity because it's a board of directors. It's not really attached to anybody. So Island Savings was phenomenal to work with. So yeah, literally almost so. I met them at their place April 15th and were taking possession like a year later and 2 weeks on April 30th.
Amazing.
So it's like everything just fell into place. So if Cyrus never went there, I never would have known that farm even existed because it's not somewhere I drive. So it was like it was meant to be.
It's in the darkest places sometimes that we find the brightest lights, right? It's amazing how that really does happen through life. Now, long term, how does this affect the sanctuary and operations, having this new property? I know there's been a fundraiser running for to help creator fix up some of the fencing. Are there other things like that that are going to be sort of ongoing in the near future? And then long term, are there any visions?
So our short-term plan, we have enough money saved right now to we need to completely reinstall the perimeter fence. Right now it's a 4-foot fence. I want a 6-foot fence put in for a few reasons. One being security. It's not easy for someone to get onto the property. Thus they can't access our animals easily. And also, like, living on Vancouver Island, there's a lot of large predators here. So there's bears here and there's cougars here, and Vancouver Island actually has the largest concentration of cougars out of anywhere in the world. So not only do I need to have that fence in to keep them safe, like cougars can jump, I think, 18 feet. So I mean, if they want to get in, they're going to get in, but we do everything we can to prevent that. So not only is it my responsibility to keep my animals safe, it's also my responsibility to keep those large predators safe, because once they start to hunt and kill farmed animals, they're going to get shot by conservation, right? So that's our first order of business, is getting that fence up and repaired. The barns, a few of them need to have the roofs repaired. I'm not sure if it's a complete replacement or not. I will find that out this week. So the barn roofs will get fixed.
Sorry, I could just see the tension headache starting as you said, I'm going to find out how much it costs this week. There was just like a little vein popped for a second. Sorry, sorry. Been there too. So,
It's not cheap. So,
yeah.
and then so yeah, there's two barn roofs that likely need to be replaced. The third barn, I think they could. It's just some minor leaks, so I think they can repair that. Those are like our first steps. Got to get that stuff done. That way we can move the animals there. And then there's some interior fencing we need to replace. Most of it is pretty good, but there's some posts and whatnot that we need to fix, and before we can bring anybody there. That will be enough to get us to bring the animals on site. There, the shop there, it is just like your everyday shop, no insulation, no heat, kind of like plywood floors, need to be completely renovated in order to make sure that we have a safe space for our animals when they're not well. Also, we have a veterinarian that we work with every single week. So he's there every Wednesday. He's going to help us like design it and get it set up properly. So that's kind of like the next order of business that we'll have to fundraise for, because that will be a com like we basically have the shell to work in, and we have to build everything inside. And then another thing that we really need to do is for our birds, we need to build really big enclosures that are completely enclosed. So there's a few issues with, one is predator control. Mink are cute little creatures, but they are deadly when it comes to your birds. They're a predator that will literally kill your whole flock. So we need to make sure that it's completely locked down, that they can't get in, because they can get in through a hole the size of a quarter. But the other big piece of that is keeping wild birds out. So, and there's like they bring in parasites, like external parasites, like lice and mites. And avian flu is huge. So
That's a
we
scary
have to
one.
be very, very scary. And it work like how it works with them too is like if we tested somebody and they came back positive, the CFIA will like call our entire flock.
I've heard that,
So yeah, so not only is there that risk, but also, I mean, if avian flu got into our flock, it's going to kill our birds. And it's the wild birds who are going to be bringing that into us. So this project will be pretty big, so we do have quite a few flocks of birds, but they will be completely enclosed with hardware cloth, proper overhead, so they're covered, protected from the rain, but they still have access to sun. And then another piece that's really important to us too is like especially chickens, like they're descendants of the jungle fowl, so we want to make these really cute, like really neat environments for them, not just your typical farmland where they're standing on grass all day. That's not what they want. We want trees and bushes and, perches and all these different things. So they have their own environment. But I mean, that project is huge, and we're gonna need to fundraise a lot of funds to do that, but it'll be pretty amazing once it's done.
I'm willing to bet there's a few horticulturists on that island who would like to participate in that project as well. Just saying,
Yes.
like if you were doing that up down the block, I'd just move in and be like, all right, let's start playing with the plants and digging holes. And it's interesting talking about the safety aspect, especially with the birds and the fowl. That's something we hear a lot about, and a lot of folks end up trapping to try and prevent it. So people will get three chickens in their backyard. A raccoon, a mink, whomever comes along and injures or kills one, they go to the store and get told, oh, here's a humane trap to deal with the raccoon. And then it goes horribly, horribly wrong. We get called in weeks later and put out press releases and inquire about charges and whatnot. So it's great hearing how much time you're putting into it and things, hardware cloth versus chicken wire and skirting the beds versus just putting it down on the ground and a lot of the really practical aspects. In terms of, and please correct me if there's a better current term, husbandry, how do you manage the birds to try and prevent that as well?
Like what we do with them to prevent predators from coming in.
Yeah, beyond, like, I mean, you clearly secure the premise, but then it sounds like you keep them within a lot of it, during the day.
You have to, like, they're so susceptible to so many different predators. You have mink, you have raccoons, I mean, dogs can come in. And then you also have your birds of prey. So, like, they're incredibly vulnerable animals. And I know of people lose them all the time. I know sanctuaries who don't put in the necessary precautions and they lose their birds constantly. So that's something we're very aware of. And there's simple things you can do too, like you don't have compost around that's going to attract them. You put the food away at night. You clean the food up off the ground. So like lots of simple things like that to keep them safe. You lock them up. Once the sun starts to go down, everybody is locked up. We do head counts. We make sure everybody is inside. Especially this time of year, they're nesting. They want to reproduce. So, and some of them know, like we remove the eggs every day from our birds and we feed them back to them. And some of them get really smart about that and they start finding creative ways to hide so we don't find the nest. So we do a head count every single night. We make sure everybody is inside. So not only to make sure they're safe, but also we're a rescue. We do not allow reproduction, right? We don't allow them to breed. So it's just a lot of people seem to be thrown off by that. They seem to think that we should allow them to reproduce, but it's just like a cat or dog rescue. You're going to spay and neuter them because you don't want a whole bunch of litters of cats and dogs, right? There's already enough animals out there for me to help. I don't need to be creating more.
No kidding. Especially when it comes to chickens. There's a few of them out and about, I believe, across the land. And it's interesting too, talking about cougars, because it's, in my brain, it's, oh, you've got cougars in the area. Forget mink. You got to deal with a cougar. But I guess a cougar is almost in some ways easier to manage in terms of protecting the animals and the property because they're a real big, and they're going to probably look for very specific things themselves when they come onto the property.
So like cougars are really like I've heard of cougars ripping open coops and stuff like that, but I'm those stories I've read, they're usually coops that are like very close to like a forest line. For us, it's their biggest risk is our goats and our sheep. So they're another animal. They're all locked up at night. Once, the sun starts to go down, they're locked up because cougars are typically hunting when it's dark. All of the stories, most of the stories I've heard on Vancouver Island, the goats or the sheep, they're being killed at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, because they're just out there standing around, right? It's like you're serving them dinner on a plate, and then all of a sudden you've got a cougar that's killing like an easy prey source, and then that starts to become a habit for them. And then, these animals get destroyed. So, like I said, it's our responsibility to keep them out, to keep our animals safe, but also to keep them safe. They need to hunt their natural prey and not come after our animals. But yeah, we're really cautious, with all predators, to keep these animals safe.
It's awesome, and it keeps the predators safe. And I think that's the other thing you said right off the bat, and I think people forget is yes, it is sad, it is tragic when a domesticated animal dies due to predation or something. But the reality is, a lot of the time, that predator who is simply acting in their natural way is going to be killed for it because we decided there is a line. between mm-hmm. these two animals. So taking that responsibility seriously is lovely to hear about. And it leads into the next question. We have a lot of listeners and supporters who love sanctuaries and want to support sanctuaries. But as you noted, and as we know, there are unfortunate situations from time to time. And they are not hard to necessarily locate, to make the point. What tips would you give people who are looking to donate to a sanctuary or get involved with a sanctuary to kind of maybe suss it out or figure out if it's one that they want to support ethically as well as functionally and practically?
Yeah, my number one recommendation, I mean, it's obviously not always possible, but if you can physically go there, go there, you know, take a look around. Even on social media, it's very easy to, you know, give a very specific perception on social media because you can choose your photos, you can choose your backgrounds. Mm-hmm. I see so many photos being posted and, you know, people are so focused on the animal that they don't actually see what's going on behind. Like, take a look behind the animal. What do the fences look like? What does the ground look like? Does the animal look healthy? Like, is what they're doing actually, you know, normal and natural? Is it, you know, I've seen a picture of like a Cornish cross chicken sitting on top of another animal. And to me, I'm like, that's not safe for that chicken. You know, so like, and then people are just like, oh, this is so cute. But you really need to, you know, stop and think for a minute, like, is this appropriate? Are how the humans involved with these animals appropriate? Like, you got to be really kind of almost critical of what you're seeing. If you can take a look, you know, if they're a registered charity, take a look on the CRA. Financials are all, you know, right there. You can see, you know, what they're spending their money on. You know, ask them questions. If they're, it should be an open book. Like, if I've had emails come to me saying like, oh, what's your wage? How much do you get paid? And for me, I'm all volunteer. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's some like CEOs and companies where they're making like six figures for charities. So they should share that information with you. I think, you know, you should ask critical questions because their financing should be open. And like I said, it's all, you can look at all of it on the CRA. Yeah. So, I mean, do your best, go there if you can, you know, ask, you know, why aren't you guys accredited? You know, there is that option out there. Why aren't you doing this? Because I think a bit of public pressure and a bit more, when people have more knowledge and they know this is an option, if you, like, people should be doing this, because that is one of the only ways that a third party can go in and make sure things are actually being done correctly. But like I said, you know, ask questions. How are they spending their money? Do you get regular veterinary care? And, you know, when, and I see animals too, who are suffering long-term, and, you know, they really, if you can't just let them carry on, you have to make that decision about quality of life. And I see that a lot where these animals, it's very blatant. They are suffering. They can't fix it, but they just let it go on and on and on. And that is hugely problematic. You cannot let an animal suffer like that. And if they're just sharing it on social media all the time and it's just going like, it's awful. And it breaks my heart, because quality of life is incredibly important. And if you cannot fix it, you need to make the decision to let them go.
Yeah. So, if they can't be who they are. And that's the conversation we've had nationally about humans too, with MAID, which is a very important subject that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I've just thrust into the conversation. But it is very true, and it is, any of us who have had to make those decisions, it is the worst feeling, the worst day of your life, and that will never, ever change when you have to make that decision. But you do that decision, and you take on that pain out of love. And I think if you approach it that way, it doesn't make it better, but it maybe makes it easier later on to sort of sit with it, the knowledge that this was the choice that was necessary for the individual who is suffering, not for me. And that's, for me, that provides, again, not relief, but maybe some release of the guilt that can come with grief and things like that. So I think that is, it's a very important thing to mention and talk about.
Yeah, and like, I've worked with Dr. Watson for, gosh, like 5 or 6 years now. And he has always said this to me, and it's something that I live by now. And he's always said, you know, a day too early is better than a day too late. Mm. So then you can, you know, when it's too late, It's not okay, and it's horrific, and it's traumatic, not only for you, but especially for that animal. But for us, if I can recognize, like I can't do any more for them, I could try and force feed them. I could try and make them do these things, but I know in the end I may get a couple more weeks out of them, but that's just for me. For us, if we recognize, like we've done everything we can, their quality of life is starting to be impacted. Like we just lost our big pig Pirate, and he had a deformed leg, and it was at the point I knew we couldn't do anymore. But we made the decision to let him go, but I can let everybody know he's going. All the people that are near and dear to him, we get to, come and see him, give him his favorite treats, give him tons of love that day. And he gets to go out on a day where he was showered with love and he was safe and he wasn't scared or in pain or anything like that. And it can be as peaceful as we can possibly make it. And it's really important that you need to make those decisions and make it at the right time.
Yeah, we owe them at the very least that much. After everything we go through as humans, and have created. But on that happy note, I'm going to pivot weirdly here. One of the things that I'm seeing as well on your social media is you're looking for folks with specific, you're looking for folks who have maybe particular skill sets or connections to help out. We've talked about roofing, we've talked about fencing, we've talked about all kinds of different things that you're looking at improving and fixing. For anyone who has an interest in getting involved or wants to find out, like, hey, you know what, I hang drywall for a living, and maybe you're not doing drywall, but I could help hold up the beams for a structure, or I can bring my tool bag. How is the or what is the best way for folks to reach out and find out if they can offer something to the sanctuary, yourself, and the animals?
Yeah, there's really there's three main ways. So there's our social media. So Facebook and Instagram, you can send us a DM on there. I'm usually pretty good at answering right away. The other option is email. So that's at homeforhooves@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to me by phone. I'm not usually the greatest at picking it up because I've got so much stuff going on, but text is really good for me.
Yes.
Fire me a text and I will usually get back to you as soon as I can. But yeah, those are the three main ways to get in touch if you're able to help.
To learn more about A Home for Hooves, donate to the sanctuary, or otherwise get involved, visit their website at homeforhooves.org or locate them on Facebook and Instagram. Links to all three are available in this week's show notes in your podcast app or at defenderradio.com. I want to thank Michelle for her time and send a big thanks to everyone making A Home for Hooves a forever home for hundreds of animals. Your dedication is inspiring. I also want to thank you for listening and sharing the podcast today. Remember to follow The Fur Bears on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube to get updates on campaigns and programs, and to subscribe to Defender Radio in your podcast app to get notified of new episodes. Until next time, I'm Michael Howie for Defender Radio and the Fur Bears, reminding you to stay informed and stay strong.